Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, May 16th, 2023. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, Dubuque City Council hears more on license plate reader system. Story by John Cruz, thmedia.com. Dubuque City Council members had several questions answered on Monday regarding a proposal to install cameras that will automatically record and track drivers by their license plates. Police Chief Jeremy Jensen proposed the city purchase an automated license plate reader system from the security company Flock Safety to help local law enforcement solve crimes more effectively and efficiently. It gives us more speed, Jensen said. Our goal is to get the crime solved as quickly and accurately as we can. The work session held on Monday saw city council members ask a variety of questions regarding the security and transparency of the system, with some council members expressing concern over the system's potential infringement on the personal privacy of residents. There's a lot of personal information that is gathered where you see people are going, Councilmember David Resnick said. Where they are going and what they are doing is very personal. However, Jensen and Hector Solomon Valdez, market manager for Flock Safety, argued that the system has several checks in place to ensure that the civil liberties and rights of residents are protected. City Council members earlier this year approved budgeting for the purchase of the automated license plate reader system in fiscal year 2024, which begins July 1. While the funding is approved for the system, City Council members must still vote on amending its traffic camera policy to allow for automated license plate readers before they can be installed by city staff. Jensen's proposal includes the installation of 22 cameras throughout the community that would have used the system to identify vehicles that have traveled in the city. All vehicles spotted by the cameras would have their license plates identified, recorded, and stored for a 30-day period and made accessible to law enforcement to assist in criminal investigations. With the system, police would be able to look up individual license plates and identify where the cameras had spotted them in the past 30 days. While the system would highlight license plates of vehicles flagged by the National Crime Information Center, Jensen previously said the city would not be required to share its license plate data with other police departments. The proposed system would cost the city $58,000 annually to maintain, along with $15,000 in upfront costs to install the cameras, which Jensen previously said would be located at major intersections in the city, such as US 52 and the Northwest Arterial, John F. Kennedy Road and West 32nd Street, US 20 and US Southwest Arterial, and US 52 and US 61/151, as well as on US 61/151, coming into Dubuque from Wisconsin. On Monday, Valdez reiterated that Flock Safety does not own or sell the footage collected by the cameras, and that any footage shared by the from the cameras would be done so by the city. Jensen added that if the cameras are installed, measures would be taken to alert motorists of their existence. We would advertise that we have this, Jensen said. If you're committing a crime, you're going to get caught. Resnick also asked questions regarding potential mistakes made by automated license plate reader systems, pointing to a 2018 controlled trial by the Police Department of Vallejo, California, which found that 37% of all automated license plate reader hits were misreads. In response, Valdez said that the Flock Safety system would require a police officer to verify a license plate flagged by the system before proceeding to make an arrest. They will need to make sure that what the Flock system is telling me and what my eyes are seeing the same thing, Valdez said. Mayor Brad Kavanaugh and City Council Member Katie Wethel questioned who would have access to the system if it were to be adopted by the city. Jensen said only law enforcement would be authorized to use the system, but information and technology staff would also assist the police department to install and maintain the license plate reader system. While Resnick continued to express skepticism toward adopting the license plate reader system, some city council members indicated their support for the proposal. Councilmember Rick Jones argued that license plates have long been a tool for law enforcement to identify criminals by the vehicles they use to commit a crime. If you do something bad with your car, someone can get the tag number and report it, and an arrest can be effected, Jones said. So technology is catching up to what was a good idea 100 or some more years ago. 5K to support skin cancer prevention set for Saturday in Piasta, Dateline Piasta, Iowa. An annual run that raises awareness of melanoma and skin cancer prevention takes place this weekend. The annual Outrun the Race will be held Saturday, May 20th at Piasta Elementary School, 8522 Birdsworth, according to an online announcement. A kids' fun run will be held at 8:45 a.m., followed by the 5K race at 9:15 a.m. Registration is $25 for participants ages 11 and older, and $15 for participants 10 and younger. Proceeds will benefit the Outrun the Rays, a nonprofit organization that works to promote melanoma awareness and sun safety. More information and registration are available at outruntherays.org. On-site registration will be available the day of the race from 8:30 to 8:30 a.m. A bike ride will be held beginning at 1 p.m. at the Dark Bird Tap House, 7305 Thunder Valley Drive in Piazza. Registration of the bike ride is not required, but donations will be accepted. Free skin cancer screenings also will be available. Details announced for annual tractor ride through Dubuque County. Dateline Dyersville, Iowa. Organizers have released details of the annual tractor ride through Dubuque County. The 20th annual Summer Farm Toy Show Tractor Ride will be held June 2nd, according to an online announcement. Check-in begins at 6:30 a.m. with the ride departing at 8:30 p.m. from the parking lot of Beckman Catholic High School, 1325 9th Street, Southeast Dyersville. I'm guessing that's actually 8:30 a.m. The 50-mile route includes a morning stop at Epworth United Methodist Church and a lunch stop at Cascade Community Park. Lunch will be provided by Mosky's Barbecue. Registration is $40 or $45 after May 26. All tractors must have yellow flashing lights or a slow-moving vehicle sign vehicle during the ride. Call 563-875-2727 for more information. Evitovich era, new UWP chancellor takes reins, focused on enrollment budget. Story by Grace Nyland, thmedia.com. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. Shortly after Tammy Evitovich was named the new chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, the congratulations started to flow in. Her email was flooded with celebratory messages, and her phone was ringing off the hook. When she ran into people on campus, she was met with hugs and kind words. While Evitovich said those interactions were, quote, heartwarming, she had something else on her mind, too. "I was ready to get to work," Evitovich said with a laugh. "I so appreciated everybody that reached out to me, but I was ready to get going." Evitovich was named UWP's newest chancellor in late April after serving in the role on an interim basis since June. She is the university's 15th chancellor and is the first woman to assume the role. She will be paid a salary of $265,000. In a recent interview, Evitovich called her time as interim chancellor, quote, invaluable to learning the ropes of running a medium-sized university. Prior to assuming the interim chancellor position, Evitovich served as provost and vice chancellor of academic affairs at UWP since June 2020. Before that, she spent more than 20 years in leadership roles at Wayne State College in Wayne, Nebraska. One of her first moves as interim chancellor was to expand her cabinet to include more employees and student voices. Academic State Staff Senate Chair Tyler Tollefson is one of those recent cabinet additions and said he greatly appreciated Evitovich's push towards, quote, shared governance among administration, students, and staff. "We're coming up on a time where, you know, there's going to be some decisions that need to be made that are going to have a big impact on employees and students. So making sure you have voices from those groups in the room is vital," Tollefson said. "Some of those decisions will revolve around how to best improve enrollment and manage the university's budget, two priorities areas which Evitovich identified as interim chancellor that she plans to continue to focus on in her permanent role. From fall 2017 to fall 2022, enrollment at UWP dropped 24.5%, in part because of students who dropped out or deferred going to college because of COVID-19 pandemic. While acknowledging that downward trend, Evitovich said the 2022 freshman class offered some hope. Despite an overall enrollment decrease, UWP reported a freshman class of 1,430 students last fall, a 13% increase over 2021. "We're optimistic about our fall 2023 class," she said. "We had a really great freshman class last year, and we want to build on that energy and bring in another strong class this year." Evitovich added that freshman enrollment is one of the four, quote, pillars of enrollment. The other three are student retention, transfer students, and graduate students. She plans to find ways to bolster all four in her time as chancellor. Over the past year, Evitovich said the university has increased its focus on providing scholarships to students in need. By offering financial assistance, college becomes more fiscally attainable for students and increases the likelihood They will enroll and complete their degrees. Avitowich also said she has directed efforts towards increasing relationships with area technical colleges to ease the transfer process for students. We're focusing on that transfer piece to achieve what I like to call a seamless transfer back and forth, she said. We welcome students from the technical college just as we work with them if our students need to take classes there. Another area of focus will be the university's budget. The university system recently increased tuition for in-state undergraduate students for the first time since 2012, but Avitowich said that alone was not enough to keep up with inflationary pressures and loss of funding from enrollment declines. When it comes to addressing those concerns, she said he plans to focus on efforts within the university's control, such as minimizing unnecessary expenditures and bolstering fundraising efforts to fund student scholarships. I focused on the things that we have some influence over, she said. We can control how we spend money, for example, and we could possibly have some control over enrollment, which generates revenue. Student body presidents Rebecca Poe said that even though students might not always like certain administrative assistance, such as a recent tuition increase, she did think students could trust Avitowich and her team to do what is ultimately best for the student body. She added that Avitowich has built up that certainty and trust through continued involvement on campus and open attitude toward connecting with students. I'm sure she'll continue to make sure that the student voice is at the center of all those big decisions, Poe said. It might not be what students think they want or need right now, but in the bigger picture, I know that she has our best interests in mind. Here's some details on Tammy Avitowich, age 56, place of residence, Platteville, Wisconsin. Family, husband Mark and two adult children. Hobbies, hiking, swimming, and meditation. Dyersville Farmers Market. Thursday Farmers Market opens this week. Dateline Dyersville, Iowa. Dyersville Area Farmers Market opens for the season on Thursday, May 18th. The market features vendors selling fresh fruits and vegetables, baked goods, eggs, honey, jams, and plants from 3 to 5 p.m. every Thursday at Dyersville Commercial Club Park, 225 11th Street Southeast. The market is held through October 5th. Vendors can secure space by calling the Dyersville Area Chamber of Commerce office at 563-875-2311. Galena Historical Society plans presentation with Vietnam veterans. Dateline Galena, Illinois. Galena Joe Davis County Historical Society will host a free interactive presentation this weekend featuring Vietnam War veterans. Boots on the Ground, presented by members of the Vietnam Veterans of America Post 2665, will take place at 2 p.m. Sunday, May 21 at the Galena Art and Recreation Gymnasium, 11084 West Highway, U.S. Highway 20, according to an online event announcement. The program is open to the public and is free, although donations are encouraged and reservations are not required. Pulitzer Prize-winning author to discuss book next month in Lancaster. Dateline, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Friday next month in Lancaster to discuss a book featuring some of the wartime experiences of a Grant County native who died in World War II. Buzz Bissinger will discuss The Mosquito Bowl, the game of life and death in World War II at 6:30 p.m. June 21 at Lancaster High School. The event is hosted by the Schreiner Memorial Library. Bissinger's The Mosquito Bowl tells the story of a football game played by members of two Marine Corps regiments on Christmas Eve 1944 on Guadalcanal in the Pacific. Within a matter of months, 15 of the 64 players in the Mosquito Bowl would be killed at Okinawa, including Lancaster native Lieutenant Dave Schreiner, a former two-time All-American football star at Wisconsin. Lancaster's library is named for Schreiner. Bissinger's appearance is sponsored in part by the Lancaster Public Library Foundation, Grant County Historical Society, and Lancaster American Legion Post 109. Contact the library at 608-723-7304 for more information. Galena Resort, holding events to benefit veterans. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. Dateline Galena, Illinois. A Galena Resort is holding several events this summer to benefit veterans. Eagle Ridge Resort and Spa will host charity activities to honor veterans July 3rd at its North Golf Course and Pro Shop at 400 Eagle Ridge Drive, according to a press release. Activities start with the Firecracker 5K Run Walk at 8 a.m. The race is $35 per person, with proceeds going to toward the Honor Flight of Dubuque. Those interested can register online. At 10 a.m., the Golden Knights Parachutes team will have a demonstration followed by helicopter tours on the driving range at 11:30 a.m. At noon, the resort will host the Honor Flight Golf Tournament, benefiting Honor Flight of Dubuque. For more information or to register, contact Tournament Director Kay Offenheiser at koffenheiser@eagleridge.com or call 815-776-5228. What It's Worth on eBay: History of the Catholic Faith, by story by Paul Connor for the Telegraph Herald. Looking back on the years, I remember having one or two sets of encyclopedias. One of the most popular was the Book of Knowledge, or the ever-present Encyclopedia Britannica. Those books provided a window to the world that today has been taken over by the Internet. In the age of before the Internet, a door-to-door salesperson would encourage young persons to invest in having a set of encyclopedias for the home. The basic value of a set of encyclopedia has been replaced by the Internet and the access we have to information that is in the cloud. Recently, you had a client bring in a rare and hard-to-find set of books, 16 books from 1913. The set was still stored in its original shipping crate from New York. The books covered the history of the Catholic faith and its impact on the world to date of publication. This set sold on eBay for $769.92 plus shipping cost. If you have an item and would like to know what it is worth, send a digital picture with a brief description to paulhconnor@gmail.com or make an appointment to visit 201 North Commerce Street, Galena, Illinois. Visit www.ezcellusa.com. The Little Church with Big Connections. Grace Church has ties to national historic figures. Editor's note, this is a 23rd of an ongoing series that highlights the stained glass art collections of Tri-State Worship Spaces. Look for the next installment the first Saturday of June. Dateline, Galena, Illinois. Tucked into a hillside on the Prospect Park Street overlooking downtown Galena, Grace Church is a striking contrast to many of the buildings surrounding it. The first service of the congregation was along the Fever River, now the Galena River, one Sunday morning in 1826, many years before the Prospect Street Church was built. The group met in the courthouse and downtown storefront, among other locations, before building a wooden chapel on Bench Street in 1836. Built in 1849 with native limestone quarried from the site and from nearby Horseshoe Mound and Scales Mound, the Gothic-style church is the oldest operating Episcopal church in Illinois. It's hard to fathom that this unassuming but beautiful little church has connections to some very well-known figures from the past. Calvin Nicholas Otis, a Buffalo, New York architect, designed the church. He was known for his Gothic church designs, including Neo-Gothic and Gothic Revival. Grace Church is one of the last examples of Otis's work still standing. In 1838, when the church was still in its wood-framed chapel on Bench Street, the congregation received a surprising gift from an unexpected source, an organ from Alexander Hamilton's widow, Elizabeth Schuyler Hamilton. William Hamilton, the sixth child of Hamilton and his wife, was a miner and politician who lived most of his life in Illinois and Wisconsin Territory before setting out for California during the 1849 gold rush. He was in and out of the area working in the mines, said Lynn Giles, Grace Church's senior warden. Grace Church may have been his place to worship when he came in, and he told his mother about it. So his mother financed the organ. The organ from Henry Urban Organ Company in New York is a chapel organ, smaller than the standard church instrument. It has been restored and refurbished several times in its 185-year existence. It's still in working condition and gets played every Sunday, Giles said. A prolific organ builder in the early 19th century, Urban's organs can also be found in famous churches such as St. Patrick's Basilica in New York City, and examples of his work are on display at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. In 1854, donations from parishioners enabled the church to buy three Belgian stained glass windows. In 1860, the church purchased the Apostle windows, also of Belgian stained glass. While the origins of the windows are unknown, Belgian glass in the Neo-Gothic style, similar to Grace's church's stained glass windows, have sold for more than $13,000 per window. A set of eight restored 19th century windows recently sold for $106,000. The original three windows were placed above the redos at the back of the sanctuary. Redos are large altar pieces or screens that are often placed behind the altar. Grace Church's redos are of carved black walnut, are an example of the Victorian embellishment often found in churches of the time. During a remodel of the late 19th century, the original windows were relocated to the new chapel and the bell tower. A lectern with a bald eagle carving was also fashioned from a single black walnut tree trunk sometime during the 1880s by Will Groner, a local wood carver. Memorial windows were purchased in the early 1890s from Tiffany & Company in New York when the church underwent a major renovation. Five windows from Tiffany & Company were in New York, Giles said. The chancel was expanded and a chapel and sacristy was added. Louis Comfort Tiffany was a New York artist who elevated stained glass from craft to art and patented his unique style of opalescent glass. In addition, the church removed its wood stoves and added hot water heating. The windows have been moved and reinstalled a number of times in the church, each time with reverence and a lot of care. Some of them are over 170 years old, Giles said. In the early 20th century, another gift came to the church from another well-known figure, Marshall Field. Marshall Field and his family used to come here from Chicago on occasion, Giles said, and when they did, they would come to church here. Field thought the church, which had whitewashed walls, was in need of some decoration. Artist Nikolai Remesov, a Russian-American, was making a name for himself in Chicago decorating ballet stages, painting murals, and illustrating covers for Marshall Field's department store catalogs. Field paid him to make a trek to Galena and design the stencils for the walls. Stencils have been restored a couple of times, most recently in 1984, when Carl Edwards, a parishioner, repaired the plaster around the stained glass windows and restored the stencil work. In 2018, a parish house was built next to the church. The Apostle stained glass windows that were originally in the church sacristy are now in our conference room upstairs in the parish house, Giles said. Despite the many times the windows have been moved to different parts of the church and the changes that have been made to the structure, the church retains its original neo-Gothic design and historic flavor. One of the things about preserving a church with this much history is the sense that it is a holy place, Giles said. It is not a museum or just preserving the past. There are many people, myself included, who walked in and just felt the place, the peace that's here. It continues to be very much alive. Galena Center for the Arts to resume figure drawing sessions, Galena, Illinois. Galena Center for the Arts, 971 Gear Street, will resume its weekly figure drawing sessions from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. beginning Thursday, May 18th. Weekly sessions will be held in the center's classroom. The center will provide the model, tables, and chairs. Students are expected to bring their own drawing and painting materials. The cost for a two-hour session is $10. For more information, visit GalenaCenterForTheArts.org or call 815-402-3111. So impressive, local scouts host hundreds for annual Mother's Day breakfast. Mary Hamill's sons were kept busy this morning, and that made her a proud mom on Mother's Day. Hamill's sons, Dominic Hamill, 20, and Austin Hamill, 20, 15, and both of Dubuque, were among members of the Boy Scouts Order of the Arrow. Timua Lodge, 74, working at the organization's annual Mother's Day pancake breakfast at Eagle Point Park. A Boy Scouts organization, the Order of the Arrow members, plan, organize, and implement breakfast events, which annually draws as many as 1,500 people to the park. Dominic and Austin Hamill were in the thick of things in the morning. Dominic helped serve sausages while Austin addressed logistical issues at the breakfast. It means a lot because they're doing this for all of the moms and grandmas, Hamill said. The event brings families together. Mary Hamill said her family attended the breakfast every year when her sons were younger. Now they are Order of the Arrow members heavily involved in the event. As they have progressively gotten older, Dominic and Austin have taken leadership roles in the Order, Mary Hamill said. They have gained leadership skills, lifelong friendships, and problem-solving skills. When things don't go as planned, then they have to think on the fly and make things happen. They have grown up a lot as they have learned those skills, so it's impressive. Boy Scout Jacob Blanchard, 18, of Dubuque, served as chairman of the Mother's Day Breakfast Planning Committee for two consecutive years. The planning starts as early as September of the year before, Blanchard said. The biggest challenge is making sure everyone gets their jobs and responsibilities done. Every year seems to pose a different type of event-related challenges, too. This year we had trouble getting eggs. We had to go to Milwaukee to get some. The weather posed an additional challenge as a light rain persistently fell on Dubuque during most of the event. There are some hiccups in organizing and implementing the event, but it all works out in the end, Blanchard said. Eagle Point Park waives entry fee for guests attending the breakfast in exchange for work the scouts perform earlier in the spring. In April, we go through the whole park and pick up all the sticks in the grass and put them on the side of the road, Blanchard said. That saves park staff money and mower blades and time getting off the mower to pick up sticks in front of them. And in exchange, they waive the entry fee for us on Mother's Day. Blanchard credited the breakfast in particular and Boy Scouts in general for helping him gain leadership skills. Before joining Scouts, I was really quiet. Now I can get up in front of people, he said. It also gives me an opportunity to meet people. Blanchard said the breakfast wouldn't occur without the hard work of the participating Scouts. He singled out the work of younger Scouts who spent the day fulfilling labor-intensive roles. It gives them leadership skills and teaches them responsibility, Blanchard said. We have some young Scouts running pancake batter from the mixer. Breakfast also gives customer service skills to the young Scouts handing out more food and coffee. It's a great opportunity. Christopher DeMont, a 15 of Dubuque, was one of the young Scouts busily honing his customer service skills. He poured coffee for families. I joined the Army 2 years ago, and this is my second Mother's Day breakfast, DeMont said. It's a lot of fun because it's nice to do something for the community and serve them food on a holiday. It gives me joy that I get to serve these people. And it's a fun experience getting out of my comfort zone and learning to talk to people. Dubuque woman sentenced to 12 years in prison for a near drowning of baby. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. A Dubuque woman has been sentenced to 12 years in prison in relation to leaving two children unattended in the bathtub, allegedly leading to a near drowning and severe brain injury to her infant. Champagne R. Sandifer Jackson, 23, was given that sentence Monday in the Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to 3 counts of child endangerment and 1 count of neglect or abandonment of a dependent person. I find that there is considerable danger to Sandifer Jackson's children, the community, to have you continue to remain in the community, Iowa District Judge Monica Zrinyakli said while ordering the sentence. I don't find a suspense sentence at all appropriate here. I can't even justify it for half a second. As part of a plea deal, charges of child endangerment causing bodily injury and possession of marijuana were dismissed. Court documents state that emergency responders were called to Sandifer's residence on May 30th after a possible drowning was reported. A then almost 8-month-old was found unresponsive and eventually airlifted to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City. Sandifer Jackson told police that she was giving the boy and his 2-year-old brother a bath with about 4 inches of water in the tub. She left the residence to see what her neighbor had called about after noticing a missed call. Sandifer Jackson indicated she was gone for about 2 minutes. When she returned, the water in the tub was higher than when she left, and the infant was flipped over out of his baby tub face down in the water. Doctors in Iowa City diagnosed the child with severe brain injury after finding evidence of a significant lack of blood flow, documents state. Documents state that hair samples from the infant and Sandifer Jackson's 2 other children tested positive for drugs following the incident, and Sandifer Jackson also had drugs in her system. Both Assistant Dubuque County Attorney Amanda Lassance and Sandifer Jackson's attorney, Joy Hoor, asked Ackley for a 10-year suspended sentence. However, Lassance asked that Sandifer Jackson be placed in the state correctional facility at 1494 Elm Street to give Sandifer Jackson needed structure such as maintaining employment and having regular drug screenings. To make herself available for her 3 other children and still be involved personally in the infant's life, she needs to take all those steps. I think if we just ordered probation, we'd be back here in the future trying to make some stability and structure for her. Hoover argued it could take months for Sandifer Jackson to get a bed at the facility as people who are incarcerated would be prioritized before a bed before her. There's an infant child that needs care of the mother and the 3 children who want to get her back in the care of the mother, Hoover said. I believe Ms. Jackson fully understands the severity and danger she has put her children in the past and does not wish to do that again. Ackley said she considered Sandifer Jackson's age, sporadic employment, continued drug use, and involvement of children in the sentence. I don't find the children to be safe placed in your care, she said. Here are some local law enforcement reports. Brett A. Hawkinson, 58, of Castle, Wisconsin, was arrested at 10:54 p.m. Sunday in an area of East 19th Street and Jackson Streets on charges of first-degree theft, possession of drug paraphernalia, and operating while intoxicated. Brock T. J. Timmons of 1252 Walnut Street was arrested at 10:16 p.m. Sunday in the area of U.S. 61, 151, and Twin Valley Drive on charges of person ineligible to carry dangerous weapons, second offense operating while intoxicated, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Criminal damage of $2,000 to a vehicle was reported at 10:30 p.m. Friday in the 3100 block of Hillcrest Road. Jeremiah Thomas, 40, of 1404 Iowa Street number 2, was arrested at 3:27 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of 2 counts of domestic assault with strangulation, 3 counts of domestic assault with injury, 3 counts of child endangerment, 1 count of child endangerment with injury, and possession of drug paraphernalia. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, May 16th, 2023 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Marvin L. Rettinger, Melvin W. Rettinger, 94 of Dubuque, died Saturday, May 13th, 2023 at Harmony Dubuque in Dubuque. A prayer service will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, May 17, 2023 at Hoffman Kitchen, Schneider & Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, followed by visitation until 7 p.m. The Mass of Christian Burial for Melvin will be held at 11:30 a.m. Thursday, May 18, 2023 at Church of the Resurrection. Burial will be at Resurrection Cemetery in Dubuque. Military honors will be rendered by Dyersville American Legion Post 137 and the Iowa Army National Guard. He was born June 16, 1928, the son of Albert and Loretta Segbers Rettinger. He graduated from Xavier High School in Dyersville, Iowa. He served in the Army during the Korean War, 1951-1953. He was a member of the American Legion Post 137. He married Hilda Deppe on November 19, 1953 at St. Francis Church in Dyersville, Iowa. He was employed at the Dyersville Commercial for 13 years, Telegraph Herald for 25 years, and in real estate for 27 years. He is survived by his wife, Hilda, six children, Tom Rettinger Dubuque, Carol Dwayne Benkin, Dyersville, Iowa, Marilyn Coughlin, Steve Lundy, Asbury, Iowa, Bev Rick Clapham, Dubuque, Iowa, Wayne Denise Rettinger, Wesley Chapel, Florida, and Mike Rettinger of Rock Falls, Illinois. Sister-in-law, Sister Julita Deppe, OSF. 10 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, 4 step-grandchildren, and 9 step-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, infant brothers Ronald and Donald, Sister Arlene DeSoto, and other relatives. In lieu of flowers, a memorial fund has been established for Melvin W. Rettinger. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in charge of arraignments. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Melvin's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. A special thanks to you to Dr. Rahm and Dr. Rundy for the care provided. Lois M. Drexler. Lois Marie Drexler, 92 of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on May 13, 2023 at Bethany Funeral Home in Dubuque. Friends and family may gather from 10 a.m. to 2 noon today, Tuesday, May 16, 2023, at St. Columbical Catholic Church. A funeral mass will be held at noon with Father Thomas McDermott officiating. The burial will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Iowa, is assisting the family. Lois was born on January 29, 1931, in Dubuque, the daughter of Joseph and Marie Richard Link. She graduated from St. Columbical High School, class of 1948. She married John B. Drexler on July 20, 1957 at St. Columbkill's. Lois worked for Northwestern Bell Telephone Company as an operator. She retired after 30 years of service. She was a member of St. Columbkill Church, the Telephone Pioneers, and the Lois Club of Dubuque. In retirement, she enjoyed weekly bridge games, lunch with friends, shopping at Yonkers, and an occasional trip to the casino. She and John were able to spend the winters in sunny Florida for 25 years, always celebrating her birthday on the beach. Lois is survived by her son, David Mary Esmond Drexler, her brother, Joe Connie Link, her sister, Jenny Dick Myers, sisters-in-law, Barbara Link and Mary Jack Link, her dear friend, Maggie Callahan, along with many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, brothers, Jack, Philip, and Richard Link, sister-in-law Mary Richard Link, and grandson Derek Drexler. The family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque and Bethany Home for their outstanding care of Lois. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to St. Columbkill Church. Christopher K. Wolf. Christopher Keith Hippie Wolf, 51, peacefully passed away at his home in Dubuque on Tuesday, May 9, 2023, surrounded by loved ones after his 3-year battle with brain cancer. Friends and family may visit from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, May 20th, 2023 at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. A memorial service will start at 1 at the funeral home with a celebration of life followed at Our Place / Slorties in East Dubuque, Illinois. Christopher, born August 12, 1971 in Dubuque, was a cherished son of Richard and Carol Yager Wolf. He attended Dubuque Senior High School, graduating in 1989. On September 8, 2001, he married Misty Welch at Dubuque Arboretum. Throughout his life, he worked at various establishments, including Dubuque Pack, Georgia Pacific, McKesson, and most recently, Amira Custom Products. Known for his passion for fishing, Christopher also dedicated many years to Monday Night Golf League at Birchwood Golf Course. He has found great joy in gardening and canning, generously sharing his homemade tomato sauce, peppers, pickles with friends and family. He had a knack for cooking, particularly grilling and smoking, was a familiar face at Creamers. A devoted fan of the Green Bay Packers and Iowa Hawkeyes, he followed their games with enthusiasm. Above all, Christopher cherished the company of his loved ones and delighted in spending quality time together, often joined, quote, cocktails at his favorite spot, Our Place. Christopher leaves a legacy of love. He is survived by his wife, beloved wife, Misty Wolf, his mother, Carol Wolf's sister, Michelle Scott Bequar, sister Vicki Roger Fielding of Spring Green, Wisconsin, his mother-in-law, Donald Welch, several adored nieces and nephews, great-nieces and nephews, and other relatives. He is also the proud godfather of Josie Rundy. He shared his home with his loyal dog, Angus, and cherished cats. He was preceded in death by his father, Richard Wolf, father-in-law, Robert Welch, his brother, Steve Wolf, godfather DJ Yeager, and other relatives. His family extends their heartfelt gratitude to the staff at Hospice of Dubuque, especially Kelly, Peggy, Chris, and Julie for their unwavering compassion and care during his final days. They also express their appreciation to Hippie's countless supportive friends and family members whose kindness and care have been an immense source of comfort throughout his illness. Charles Myhe. Belmont. Charles Myhe, 89, of Belmont, passed away peacefully at Edenbrook at Platteville on Saturday, May 13, 2023. He was born September 10, 1933, in Iowa City. The son of Robert and Julia Myhe, he attended Piazza High School, where he was a standout athlete, graduating in 1951. During his senior year, he was in church and heard someone singing in the choir. The voice of Carol Beresford had him immediately interested, and when he had the opportunity to meet her, he was hooked for good. Charlie and Carol were married on June 29, 1952, at the ages of 17 and 18, and spent the next 70 years at each other's side. They farmed the Piazza area for several years. In 1958, they purchased a farm in rural Belmont and moved there with four young kids and not much money in their pocket. Through hard work and determination, they had the farm paid off by 1969. Then in June that year, a tornado came and took everything but the house. They started over again and rebuilt the farm and farmed until 1979, when they moved into Belmont. Charlie was a devoted member of Peace Lutheran Church in Belmont, where he served as Sunday school superintendent and sang in the choir. He later joined the Belmont Methodist Church and was a founding member of the men's prayer breakfast there. He also served on the Belmont School Board. He was a Farm Credit Service Board member for many years. During that time, he became a district director, was involved in agriculture policy at the national level. He was a longtime member of the Belmont Lions Club, where for 16 years he did fishing screening for thousands of area school children. Land conservation was important to him, and he received several awards for his conservation measures on the farm. He was an outdoorsman, along with Carol, enjoyed hunting and fishing trips as their vacation from the farm. Charlie and Carol were members of the Southwest Indoor Rifle League and shot throughout Southwest Wisconsin. He was an avid sports fan and enjoyed many years of watching his kids and grandkids compete in high school and college. He also had a soft spot for dogs. Charlie is survived by his one and only love of 70 years, his wife Carol of Belmont, and six children, Joe Jim Mosbrook, and Harney Ann Myhe of Darlington, Mark Chris Ann Myhe of Nakusa, Ruth Dan Camps of Belmont, Tim Judy Myhe of Holman, and Mary Chris Furry of Platteville. He is also survived by 19 grandchildren and 23 grandchildren. He was preceded by death by his parents and other family members and relatives. His funeral will be held on Thursday, May 18th, 11 a.m. at the Belmont Methodist Church with burial in the Belmont Cemetery. Friends may call at Melby Funeral Home in Platteville from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 17th, and from 10:15 until the time of the service on Thursday. The family would like to thank Belmont EMS, staff at Southwest Health in Edenbrook and Platteville for their kind care. Know that what you did for him was greatly appreciated. Loretta M. Dawkins, Loretta M. Dawkins, 96 of Dubuque, died on Sunday, May 14, 2023. There will be no public visitation. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, May 19th at Holy Ghost Church. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Barbara J. Glazer Schweikart, Scottsdale, Arizona. Barbara J. Glazer Schweikart, 87 of Scottsdale, formerly of Dubuque, died Tuesday, May 9th. Services were held in Scottsdale on Saturday, May 13th. Messenger Indian School Mortuary of Scottsdale assisted the family. Ernest J. Thole, Manchester, Iowa. Ernest Ernie J. Thole, 87 of Manchester, died Monday, May 15th, 2023. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 18th, at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. Massive Christian burial will be held 11 a.m. Friday, May 19th, at St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Ron L. Tobas, Deadline Glen, Illinois. Ron L. Tobas was born June 19th, 1941, in Evanston, Illinois, to Lillian Pauline Tobas and Lawrence A. Tobas. He attended Loyola University and earned a bachelor's degree in speech and drama. While at Loyola, he served as Army Reservist and an active duty MP. He wed Alice M. Noel in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin on June 6, 1964. They were separated only by her passing on January 6, 2011. Ron grew up in the small Norwegian farming community of Iola, Wisconsin, with his parents and sister Jacqueline Osowski, who was 11 years his senior. When his parents divorced, he and his mother Lillian moved to Evanston, Illinois, where he pursued his degree in speech and drama at Loyola University. He taught speech and drama at Joseph Inham Academy of the Sacred Heart for 9 years, and then speech and drama at St. Scholastic Academy for 13 years. Both institutions were all-girls Catholic high schools in the Chicago area. He remained in touch with many of his former students and adopted and endearingly referred to them as his adopted daughters. He was employed by the United States government with teaching assignments twice throughout the country. Twice he was awarded the Faculty Excellence Award. He was thrilled to have his last teaching assignment in Hawaii. His teaching and acting career spanned theater groups from Chicago's North Shore to Galena, Illinois, to Door County, Wisconsin, and many other locations. He was known for getting actors to perform at their absolute best, and while he himself loved acting, he found directing more to his liking. Across his 56 years in theater, Ron would sometimes work on 8 or more projects per year. He directed over 140 plays. Along with his wife Alice and their friends, he co-founded the Main Street Players Theater Company in Galena, Illinois in 1986. He also served as artistic director of the Theater of the Western Springs for 8 years. In 2004, he and Alice moved from Chicago to their permanent residence in Galena. In 2006, he took over writing and directing Galena's annual Cemetery Walk. He wrote over 80 scenes in the 16 years of Cemetery Walk productions. In 2015, with the 150th anniversary of the Civil War approaching, he was commissioned by Elena Joe Davis County Historical Society to write, create, and direct the play Peace in Union to celebrate the occasion in Galena. In 2019, he was inducted into the Galena History Museum's Heritage Hall of Fame. He had most recently played a major role in an independent film produced by his friend Roger Coons called Carbon Man. This was Ron's first film, and he considered it his most professional accomplishment. Besides his passion for theater, he enjoyed antiquing, traveling, writing, and getting together with his treasured family and friends. He and Alice were both proud and passionate about their shared Norwegian heritage. They visited their homeland to connect with their families. Throughout these travels and family connections, he became good friends with his new adopted son, Lars Arne Skar. He is survived by his nieces and nephews, Jane, Terry McKnight, Sandra, Mark Bystrom, Mary, Bob, Rob Reed, and Jerry Bukalki, Joe Jean Osowski, Lori Mark Osowski, his sister-in-law, Doreen, Donald Bars, and many great nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his beloved wife, Alice, his parents, Lawrence and Lillian Polzine Tobas, and dear sister, Jacqueline Glee Osowski. He requested that any memorial donations be made in his and Alice's names to the Alice Tobas Curatorial Endowment Fund at Galena, Joe Davis County Historical Society. A service to celebrate his life will be held at Grace Episcopal Church in Galena at 309 Hill Street on Friday, May 19th at 10 a.m. Online condolences may be left at the www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Merlene L. Henricks Clayburgh. Merlene Lena Fecht Henricks Clayburgh, 93, died Tuesday, May 9, 2023, at Grand Meadows campus of Luther Manor in Dubuque, Iowa. Merlene was born on September 9, 1929, in Carthage, Illinois, to Amos and Lena Ufkes Fecht. She attended Carthage High School and Carthage College, both in Carthage, Illinois. She married Robert Jack Henricks in 1950. They had two sons, Mark and Michael. After Jack's death, she remarried Daniel Clayburgh of Cuba, Illinois. Merlene was a talented lady who was very involved in the Cuba community. She was employed at Alexander Lumber Company, the State Bank of Cuba, and Gem City Savings over her career. She was a longtime member of the Cuba United Methodist Church, where she served in many capacities, most notably as an organist for services, weddings, and funerals, and as a member of United Methodist Women. She was a 53-year member of PEO Chapter CB in Cuba. She was a beautifully talented seamstress in her younger years and kept up her abilities with quilting, producing lovely quilts for herself and family and also others through the Quilters Group at the Methodist Church and the Quilt Guild in Canton. She expressed other talents through china painting, gardening, canning, and preparing amazing meals. She was a devoted mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and friend. She lavished everyone with her generosity, love, and attention. She was always there with homemade goodies, a hug, and a beautiful smile. We are blessed to have her, and we will miss her always. She is survived by her son, Mark Stacy Henricks of Asbury, Iowa, stepdaughter, Mary Ron Cruzan of Cuba, Illinois, granddaughters, and other relatives. She was predeceased by her husband, Jack Henricks, husband, Danny Clayburgh, son, Michael, sister, Esther Walker, and brother-in-law, Chuck Walker. A funeral service will be held Saturday, May 20th, 2023, at Cuba United Methodist Church, Cuba, Illinois. Her family will greet family and friends. 10 a.m. with the funeral service at 11 a.m. Burial will be at the Cuba Cemetery. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque, Iowa, is assisting the family. The Cuba family requests that in lieu of flowers, memorial contributions be made to the Cuba United Methodist Church, Hospice of Dubuque, or charity of your choice. Anne Mai, 90 of Dubuque, died Friday, May 12, 2023. Private services will be held. Sigurd and Caspert Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Karen P. Kelchin, Dateline Cascade, Iowa. Karen P. Kelchin, 80 of Cascade, died Friday, May 12th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, May 20th at St. Martin's Catholic Church, Cascade, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. Burial will be in the Calvary Cemetery in Cascade, where a funeral home of Cascade is assisting the family. Joseph L. Kutch, Joseph Lawrence Kutch, 88 of Dubuque, passed away Wednesday, May 10th at 2023 at Ennoble Skilled Nursing Rehabilitation Center in Dubuque. The private service for him will be Monday, May 15th, 2023 at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory with Father Dennis Quint officiating. Here's a list of funeral services. Jeffrey Glass, Castle, Wisconsin, Celebration of Life, 3 to 7 p.m. Saturday, May 20th. J&J Sandbar, Cassville. Gene M. Herkes, Dubuque. Service, 11 a.m. today. Egelhoff, Sigurd, and Casper Funeral Home Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Henry H. Holston, Dubuque. Visitation, 1 to 1:45 p.m. today. Bear Funeral Home, 41491 Main Street. Service, 2 p.m. today at the funeral home. Kenneth A. Johnson, Dubuque. Mass of Christian Burial, 10 a.m. today. St. Anthony Catholic Church. Karen P. Kelchin, Cascade. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, May 20th. St. Martin's Catholic Church, Cascade. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Beverly A. LaRoque, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. today. Garrity Funeral Home, Chapel, Prairie du Chien. Catherine Liebold, Dubuque. Visitation, 10 to 11:30 a.m. today. Word of Life Church, Prayer Service, 11:30 a.m. today at the church. Eunice M. McGrath, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 10:30 a.m. today. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Benjamin Quick, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, May 21. Route 35, Pub and Pizza, Bloomington. Ron M. Ron L. Tobas, Galena, Illinois, service 10 a.m. Friday, May 19th, Grace Episcopal Church, Galena. Michael J. Vandenberg, Dubuque, graveside service 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, May 17th, Linwood Cemetery. Daniel J. Willenborg, Dyersville, Iowa, visitation 2 to 8 p.m. today and from 9 to 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 17th, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville, Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Here's a look at some other local crime news. Dubuque man fined, charges dismissed related to assaults. A Dubuque man was recently fined in connection with multiple charges, but several charges related to alleged assaults against two women were dismissed. Cyril L. Harvey, 32, was sentenced in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to two counts of fifth-degree criminal mischief and two counts of disorderly conduct. Sentencing orders from Iowa District Judge Robert Richter state that Harvey is responsible for a $105 fine under each count. Multiple charges were dismissed as part of a plea deal. Three counts of child endangerment, domestic assault impeding airflow, domestic assault with display or use of a weapon, domestic assault with injury, secondary harassment, assault causing injury, obstruction of emergency communications, and assault. The dismissed charges were related to alleged assaults against two women in 2020. Here's some biz buzz news. Popular Dubuque restaurant open at new location. Platteville location of cell phone store open. Dyersville equipment dealer expands. A popular Dubuque eatery recently opened in a new location. Sugar's Soul Cafe opened last month at 1106 University Avenue, the former home of Sugar Ray's Barbecue near Pizza Hut and Happy Joe's Pizza. The restaurant previously was located at 1220 Iowa Street, and the location closed in March. "We want the best quality for our customers," said Snowflake Naylor, who runs this restaurant with her son, Shelvin. "I want to learn everybody's first name when they come in here." Sugar Soul Cafe opened at its Iowa Street location in 2021. "I believe the vision I had was too big for Dubuque," she said. "I had a vision of bringing fine dining with soul food to downtown, but COVID-19 was still having an impact on restaurant traffic in 2021. The timing wasn't right," she said. The new Sugar's Soul Cafe location is open for carryout and curbside pickup, though there are several seats available for customers to sit if they choose. Naylor said she also plans to have a game table for customers to play. Cell phone store now opening in Platteville. The Platteville location of a cell phone store is open in its permanent location. U.S. Cellular opened in February at 1601 Progressive Parkway, the same building as Starbucks, according to store manager Chris Teske. "We were in a temporary location down the road from July to February," Teske said. "We leased space out of the old doctor's office by the Smart Serve gas station until the Progressive Parkway building was ready. Crews broke ground last spring on the building that houses U.S. Cellular and Starbucks stores located near Menards and Walmart." Teske said that the temporary location allowed Platteville customers still be served by the U.S. Cellular during the construction period. "There's a much more open arrangement here at the new location," he said. "It's a lot more visible with better access, which is nice. It's also nice to be next to Starbucks." The U.S. Cellular store is one of several developments announced within the last year and a half along Progressive Parkway. In addition to Starbucks and Arby's and a Quick Trip have opened, and Tidal Wave Auto Spa is in development. Dyersville equipment dealer, now largest of company's 10 locations. The Dyersville location of a John Deere equipment dealer is now the largest of the company's locations in northeast Iowa. Bodensteiner Implement 13843 Iowa 136 North is now operating out of an approximately 60,000 square foot building in Dyersville, tripling its space in the community. "We had multiple buildings before, multiple smaller buildings," said Brett Hohenberry, manager of the Dubuque location, or Dyersville location. "Our technicians were spread throughout the space. Now we have one shop where all the technicians can be under the same roof and have access to the parts department. It's a lot easier to get to and a lot easier to get parts to the technicians." Bodensteiner Implement was founded in 1982 by company president and CEO Bob Bodensteiner. There are 10 retail locations throughout northeast Iowa, including Elkader and Monticello. And that does it for the today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, May 16th, 2023. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.